taking a ride on the Freedom Train, your community resource podcast series. I'm your conductor, Joseph Ward, and riding with me today is my man, Patrick Irvin. My man, Jamie Busham, couldn't be here today, but what up, Jamie? Yes, sir. The Freedom Train is sponsored by PAX, Inc., and that's PACTSINC. And PAX, Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. And make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com to learn more about us and to hear the playbacks of your favorite radio show, of your favorite podcast shows, because we know you have a favorite, so join us. Also, follow us on Twitter and Instagram at _FreedomTrain and subscribe to the Freedom Train on iTunes and Google Play Music. Pat,
what up?
What'd it look like?
It looked like two donkeys. And I forgot what I was going to say, but...
A bear and a tiger?
Nah, if I was going to say a bear and a tiger, I would have said a lion.
Okay, there you go. I mean, okay, Winnie the Pooh. One of them, that's where I thought you were going. Eeyore, don't nobody ever show Eeyore love.
Winnie the Pooh, what is, oh, it's a piglet. Never mind. I was going to say, what is that little ugly thing called? But they call it piglet, so it's a piglet. It's a baby pig. I got it.
It's a possum.
It is not a possible. Stop that.
Man, so on the show today, we're putting it down. We have Dr. Daniel Holler, who's one of the co-founders of the United Peoples of Black America. What's going on, Doc?
Hey, what's going on, my man?
Nah, we're good. Happy to have you here on the Freedom Train so we can learn more about the United Peoples of Black America, what you do, what you bring to the table, and why people should want to become a part of UPBA.
Right, I'm happy to be here. Happy to be here.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So we can get into some good discussion. But before we jump into the discussion, I want to give the people some background information about you.
All right.
I'm sorry, I pressed the wrong button. All right. Dr. Holler completed his PhD in clinical psychology from Florida State University, where he taught general psychology, worked with juvenile sex offenders, and forensic psychic inpatients. Upon graduation, he was beginning a visiting professorship at Florida A&M University, where he taught multiple undergraduate and graduate-level courses, including Introduction to Psychology, Abnormal Psychology, Personality Assessment, and Psychoeducational Assessment. Currently, he is working in the community doing disability and QI learning assessments for the state of Florida. Dr. Holler also works as a behavior analyst with felony offenders who have mental illnesses and have been committed to a state psychiatric facility. His research investigates the role of the acculturation of psychopathology, which can be found in his newly published book, Suicide and Eating Disorders: Behavior Among Individuals of African Descent. Dr. Holler is one of the founders of the United Peoples of Black America, or UPBA, a national grassroots movement focused on providing African-centered services to members of the African Black American community, as well as developing policies in six areas of human activity designed to foster independence and organized growth and development within the African American community. And once again, we present to you Dr. Daniel Holler. Yeah.
All right.
Yes, sir. Now, you are the man. You are the man with the plan. So we want to learn, you know, tell us more about UPBA. And, Pat, you know what it is. You got the first question. Let's do this.
Well, you already stole my thunder because you asked the first question already.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did. You said, tell us a little bit more about UPBA. And that was going to be my first question. What is UPBA? You stole my thunder. I quit.
Well, you got to ask. You can ask it with more je ne sais quoi.
I don't know what that means. Dr. Holler.
Yes, sir.
Please excuse the actions of my very unprofessional
whatever
host. But anyway.
All right. Their excuse. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Can you please tell our audience what UPBA is, why it's needed, and why it is a society instead of an organization?
Most definitely. Most definitely. I think, first of all, I think what I would like to say is, in order for us to have power, we have to have order. So we have to learn how to be organized on a grand scale, not just locally in our communities, that's important, but also nationally. So order is one way in which a small group of people, let's call them the 1%, we've heard about them, that's how that small group of people can get together and enforce their worldview, their norms, their needs, wants, and desires on the 98 or 99% of the rest of us here in the U.S., especially on the Black peoples of America. So what we need is a diverse society of peoples in Black America ready to tackle the demands of the future in those longstanding areas of concern for all Black Americans. And so we mean for all of us be called Black, whether you call yourself an African American, a Moor, a Hebrew Israelite, whether you're Islamic, Christian, or atheist, or whatever other way in which we have chosen to identify and divide ourselves into our subcultures in this wilderness of North America. And it is my belief that in order for us to accomplish this, we have to become a united peoples of Black America. And so, to go into what is United Peoples of Black America? United Peoples of Black America is a society. I think that was your question. Why is it a society, not an organization? So a society is a group of people that have interactions together, and they persistently interact socially on a large group scale based on their geography of where they're located or their social territory. And these people typically work together to achieve some type of political advancement. They have similar cultural expectations and norms, and they are very distinct from that dominant culture or society that they exist in. So a society can be members on an individual basis, made up of individual people, or groups or other organizations. So a society can consist of like-minded people governed by their own norms and values that exist, again, within the dominant society. And so the reason UPBA is a society and not an organization, when I say organization, I think of an organization referring more to the formal structural operations or the mechanics of a society. So UPBA is a national society that has different subgroups or different independent organizations that we work with. So we also work with organizations that are already out there in the community that have similar goals and ideals, such as the Tallahassee Community Healing Network, Revolutionary Black Panther Party. We're hoping to work with PACs. I guess we kind of are working with PACs as well in their urban development plan. And so these individuals and these groups of people get together and function as a society where you can participate as an individual or as your organization to help us push a socio-economic and political agenda that is in the best interest of all Black Americans, regardless of our status, our educational level, our religious affiliation. And so this is why we call UPBA a society versus an organization. UPBA is a society in which you are born into because of the color of your skin. Okay, and the purpose and goal of UPBA is to create greater solidarity among its members of Black society. So you're a member of this society by your birthright. We're not requiring you to adopt a religion, contribute financially, or participate in any type of overt political action. Of course, contributions and participation is encouraged. We also are not suggesting that your racial identity is the most important aspect of your life or that you should prioritize racial politics in any prescribed way. However, UPBA represents the concerted efforts of a wide range of private citizens and pillar institutions that recognize the necessity of coming together in an organized and strategic manner to keep us safe and give us more control over our lives and what happens in our community.
Cool. Okay. I guess that's a greater understanding of what you guys are bringing to the table as far as a society. Because, like, you know, tradition and the way that we are conditioned, that everybody think, you know, when I hear such and such and such is an organization that's formidable, and I hear something that's a society, I'm like, well, what is that? So I'm glad you're able to clear that up so everybody understands what you bring to the table. So now, one of the first things you talked about was organization. Of course, we know Black America, we, like you said, and everybody know, we lack the organization that we need on a national scale to be able to help ourselves the way we need to. So in your opinion, why do you think Black America lacks so much organization across the board? And what are some things that we can do to start to build more organization within Black America?
Right. So, I guess the first part of your question is why do I think Black America? Why does UPBA think Black America lacks organization, and what should be done? Right. So the way we look at it is basically integration has whittled down our ability to recognize our own leaders in our community. Instead, our leaders are often chosen and selected by persons from outside of our community through various funding that they get or organizational institutional systems that support those individuals. And those individuals are therefore then called leaders in our community, but we oftentimes have not selected those people that we see before us. The problem, among many, is that these outside interest groups come into our community, and these outside interest groups have a history of oppressing the Black community as a whole and draining vital resources from the community. Oftentimes, the best and brightest from our community are cherry-picked and ushered into these acculturation programs, these Ivy League institutions that are funded by the white establishment. And the benefits that those individuals are contributing to society oftentimes go to the larger white community or the American society in general, to the detriment of the Black community, as this is these skills and expertise and this talent and ability that members of our community have tends to be our only real resource at the moment. We don't own any land to drill out any oil, to go into any oil mines or coal mines. We don't own any major industries, any car or auto industries. We don't own any major shipping liners and shipping industries. Okay, so our resource today is each other, our human resource, our intellect, our skills, our ability, our vocational skills. And we need to start trying to pull these resources that we have together. Instead of always utilizing them to advance other people, we need to start using them to advance ourselves. Because if we don't, we're going to get left behind in this race game that has been imposed upon us.
That's true.
Right. So I guess the second half of your question was, what can we do to get organized?
Right.
Is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
Right. So there are various things that we can do and that we are doing. UPBA, we try to tackle this organization need in about 6 or 7 areas of human activity. So what we have is we have the overarching UPBA umbrella, and then we have different community projects that we set up and run throughout the country. And so these are projects or committees that we have in economics, human rights, health, justice, family, politics, and education.
Mm-hmm.
And so based on those 6 or 7 areas of human activity, that is how we organize the members of our community, their skill level and expertise, to see what is it that they can do, what can they contribute that we can utilize and implement to help build our community in those 6 or 7 areas of human activity.
Okay.
I like
cool.
that.
Right.
I like that a lot, actually. It's very structured. A lot of the times we don't, like, it really sounds like you guys really sat down and really thought about this and how you're going to structure it and how you're going to put it in place.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like, it sounds like
for
you have a lot of planning.
The planning and implementation, the framework designing, creating the architectural structure for this was a process that took a year, so 12 months of doing the research and coming up with the policies, the declaration that we have, the constitution that we have that goes along with UPBA, et cetera. So yeah, it definitely is something that, you know, we took some time, effort, and energy to think about seriously. It's not something that we just want to, you know, put it out there willy-nilly and have people out there following us and us making things up as we go. UPBA is not about people following anybody. It's about giving you the tools and the ability, the blueprints you need to organize your community where you are to make things happen where you are, whether you are right. in D.C., which we have people there, Philadelphia, New York, Fort Lauderdale, or right here at home base in Tallahassee.
That's true.
24 karat magic. I like it. I like it. You know what I like most is that, actually, it's not what I like most. It's what I find most interesting, and only because it's awkward. And it's a very trivial thing, but I'm always excited about little trivial things, so don't think I'm weird or anything. But you said we have bases. We have people in Washington, D.C., and you named two or three other big cities, and then you said, but our home base is here in small-town Tallahassee. That is so freaking weird.
This is the base of operations. This is the war room, the think tank. That's right. This is where this was birthed from.
But I understand your logic because they never look for brains in small towns. So you've added another layer of protection by residing in small town Tallahassee. I see where you're going with this. I'm picking up what you're putting down. I got you. I got you.
All right.
Am I reaching?
We'll have to see. We can't reveal everything, right?
There you go. Code of conduct, baby. And we got that's something else. When we get a chance to talk offline as well, put you up on that, the code of conduct. So.
Gotcha.
How will UPBA's contribution be different from other organizations, societies, or groups in the past? Like, what are you planning on doing that hasn't been done before? Or if it has been done before, what are you planning on doing that might be a little bit different?
Right. So we have a lot of organizations functioning in the Black community already. We have fraternities, sororities. We have the NAACP, the Urban League. And, you know, they're interested in economics. They're interested in things that have to do with health of the community, with family, with education. And that's also what we are interested in continuing on and participating with. What makes UPBA rather unique from those institutions are a couple of things. One, we are not interested in taking monies from outside of our community, from people outside of our community, because we don't want to be beholden to people that are foreign to our community who don't have an understanding of who we are as a people, what our needs, desires, and wants are. As part of psychological well-being, it's important for the individual to reach a point of self-actualization where they have the ability to define themselves, their environment, their reality, and to manipulate the environment in a way that they are able to reach their goals. Okay? And so we can't do that by being dependent on a larger group of people. We've been doing that for the last 50 or 60 years, and all it has gotten us is more and more assimilated into the larger society and less vested in each other as Black people. And so what makes UPBA unique is that we are also focusing on policy development. That's the aspect of the game that I think that we as Black people oftentimes have not engaged ourselves in. If you go back to after slavery, during the Reconstruction period, there were a lot of Black men in politics and trying to, make changes, and there were thriving Black communities going on. But due to the system that we live under and the people in that system, we basically got railroaded out of politics. Our towns got burned to the ground. So that's why Black people are in the dire straits that we are today, not because we haven't tried to do anything about it, but because there have been institutional forces, there have been policies that have put in place that have kept wealth from being built and retained in the Black community and have taken those wealth-building ideas and people and vehicles out of our community. And so when you do things like that and you lynch people and you burn their towns down and you get them out of politics, it kind of makes people afraid to participate in that. It kind of makes them feel like, they have no vested interest to participate any longer. So UPBA is focusing on policy demands to go along with these six or seven areas of human activity that we feel will help to build those areas, to help protect those areas, and help them thrive in our community.
That's what we need. That is exactly what we need. Go ahead.
Right. If I could just kind of go on for a little bit, I wanted to just say something because I think it's just important.
Nah, go ahead.
To get out there. Okay. So, you know, what is the historical context and the precedent for us doing this behavior? Some people may think, oh, what are you doing? Are you separatist? Are you trying to cause some kind of insurrection and you're trying to rebel? And people get afraid. I mean, I think we all know working in a community when you start talking anything about black self-determination and black power, people get kind of afraid, especially in the Deep South, which is where we're located. We're in the Deep South. And people don't want to hear that kind of talk. It brings back a lot of trauma, a lot of old memories of things that have happened in these parts. And so the dependence that we have as black people on the U.S. Constitution as a guarantor of rights lacks effectiveness and efficiency given the many judicial reversals on the issues of race and civil rights. You know, they talk about affirmative action policies. Well, where are those policies today? They're trying to get rid of all those policies, right? They say you got a black president, everything's equal, but we see that's not the case.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
particularly any. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just going to say because we have a tendency of not really understanding that concept that we have to we have to start paying attention to what's going on. Like look at it historically, look at it empirically, like look at everything that's going on before we just kind of jump on that and say, well, this is the way it's supposed to be.
Right. Right. And the other thing is these policies that they have in the Constitution of the United States and in certain states that have certain legislative laws and rules, what they end up doing is they disregard the historical significance and uniqueness of being a black American, and they group us into this hodgepodge called minority group. And so they classify us, people that were here before the foundation of the United States of America, we were already here in this land when this country formed. And so, therefore, we have some type of sovereign right that is totally ignored, okay? And they put us in a group of minorities, and they talk about doing things for minorities. And so people who have, their ancestors just came here within the last 10, 5, 50 years from Europe are able to partake in those benefits for minorities. Those benefits for minorities were specifically created for black people in America. But because we have allowed them to manipulate us in a way to classify ourselves as colored people and as minorities. Now you can put women in there, gays, Asians, people who just come over today that don't speak English. You can put anybody in that category, and it shows a blatant disrespect and disregard for the historical context that black people were here before the United States Constitution was ratified. And so we have a unique ownership of this country because we fought in all of its wars, and we built the roads and a lot of its institutions. You see in the news today, you see all those Ivy League institutions coming out, finding out that, hey, these were built by slaves. These were owned by people who owned slaves.
Right, yeah. Right.
So right. We have a strong history in this country. We shouldn't give up our ownership to it, and we shouldn't allow ourselves to be mixed in with other groups of people because we have a unique historical context. So the United Peoples of Black America asserts a sovereign right to identify and remove barriers to the enjoyment of human rights, dignity, and self-determination that are afforded to some, but not all, of the people in this world, particularly the people here in these United States of America, the black people here. So this sovereign right is not only supported by the articles found in the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So these are ideas that are in existence that we have not yet organized and utilized yet to our benefit.
There you go.
So not only is it based on Human Rights Declaration from the United Nations, it's grounded, like I said, in the history of this land when there were more than 300,000 black Africans that were present in this country before the formation of the United States and the ratification of its Constitution in 1776. So as such, the U.S. Constitution was formed without the consent or equal input of the African people it will ultimately govern for centuries, and it's incumbent upon us as heirs of that legacy for us to unite and organize our voice in a self-determined agenda And three longstanding areas of human activity that are of concern for us right now: police brutality, the prison industrial complex; two, political disenfranchisement; and three, economic deprivation. So this is what UPBA is about, and that's what our policies address. For example, when we talk about justice in the prison industrial complex,
mm-hmm.
police brutality.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing we want to do is address the continual collective violence that's perpetrated by the police and law enforcement officers, and the ongoing cycle of race-related crimes against the black people of America. This devaluing of black life by those specific entities that I just mentioned are part of a long-established tradition in the history of the United States of America. So we can go all the way back to police used to be called slave catchers, and they were out there with dogs trying to catch black people that were supposedly breaking the law by trying to be free.
Right.
Right? And so now we have police officers today that have dogs that attack black people with these dogs,
mm-hmm.
where black people are trying to exercise their rights to liberty in the pursuit of happiness, to be free.
Right, nothing's
changed. So this
is
just a continuation of the same process. Right, so we need policies to address that. That's not something that you can just go out there and protest every time somebody is shot and killed. There needs to be laws instituted that avert people from participating in that behavior because there is going to be a punishment. Right.
Yes, sir.
So second, the area of politics, there are laws that have been constructed to discourage and neutralize a large portion of the black American participation in the political process. We're looking at it today. They gerrymander the county lines. They do voter suppression, we hear going on. And so we need policies instituted. We have policies that we will be demanding that they are instituted. One, for example, would be that all the voter laws in all the United States should be the same. You shouldn't go from one state to another and have different voter laws. How are we a United States of America if we're all doing something differently when it comes to our one fundamental responsibility as an American, which is to vote? But in every state, they got different rules, different laws that allow you or disallow you to vote.
Mm-hmm.
The third area that we have policies for the advancement of our community is that it focuses on economics. Because from our research, what we see, there's no formal agenda, no formal national agenda addressing the rampant economic deprivation and lack of financial mobility of the black peoples in America throughout the country. So whether you're in the South, out north, up north, or out west, the racial and ethnic wealth gaps are at about their highest levels in the last 30 years. We need policies to help address that. Okay. And so we have those, and I guess as we continue discussing tonight, I'll be able to tell you some examples of those policy demands that we have.
Okay. Now, that's cool because, like I say, the conversations like this need to be had and information like this need to be had. That's why I was so blown away and excited about the sessions that we had during Community Healing Days, because these are some of the regular conversations that we have amongst ourselves as PACs. So it's good to have other people to talk to this with. So,
right. All right.
So, and we've touched on this in the beginning, but we're talking about a race first mentality. So, in your opinion, why is it important for Black America to have a race first mentality when fighting oppression? Is that a plus for us, or is that something that is a hindrance to us having a race first mentality?
Right. And so, yeah, I have my opinion, but, what benefit does that do to anyone? So what I'll give instead is my educated opinion, my informed opinion, based on the heroes and scholars and activists as defined by members of our own community. So we find mentors and role models like Marcus Garvey, Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm X, Louis Farrakhan. You talk about the Black Panthers, Elaine Brown, Kwame Ture. You can talk about Dr. Amos Wilson, Dr. Francis Cresswell Singh, Neely Fuller Jr., all the way up to Dr. Naeem Akbar, all who similarly teach on one accord that we must be race first, men and women, if we are to survive and thrive in the current world system. And so that's what I base my opinions off of. What do our scholars and our heroes say? Not the ones that have been put up in front of us by outside community members, by these outside interest groups who put people, these overseers in our community. But what do our scholars say? What do our activists say, our heroes, about what we should be doing as a community of people, as a nation
correct.
Within a nation of people.
Correct. Yeah, because I love Dr. John Hammers Clark saying, he said, because one of the videos he's talking about, other groups of people always asking for black interests, or black people thinking that they need the interests of other groups. And he says, well, if you're looking for a friend, damn it, look in the mirror. Because from my research, every time we lend our services to outside groups, it always ends up biting us in the butt. But whenever we need outside groups, they're nowhere ever to be found.
So here's a good way to illustrate that point that you just said about when we, you know, about our talents and our gifts benefiting outside group members. So what happens when that happens? Here's a real basic way to see that. When you got Florida A&M University versus the University of Miami, you know, when you have a game that shows you right there, some of our, you're not saying that our Florida A&M athletes are not part of our best and brightest, but we do know that those other institutions have more money to offer those athletes when they're coming out of high school, more scholarship money. And so they're likely to go to these other top-tier institutions, these white institutions, these Ivy League institutions. And so when you compete those two institutions against each other, Florida A&M and the University of Miami, it's almost guaranteed, you know, who's going to win that game. Well, the same thing is going on in society, in America, when you have the best and brightest of our black individuals that go oftentimes to these acculturation assimilation programs called Ivy League institutions, and they end up going into corporate America or into the white establishment using their skills in that community because they pay more than we can pay our own people. So it's the same thing. So you see the other community, you see the larger white society getting stronger and better because they're taking our best and our brightest, just like the, let's say, the University of Miami football team can always outplay an HBCU team because they're taking the best and brightest from that original pool of high school graduates.
Right.
So I got a question that's off the beaten path.
Okay.
What would you say, because we hear this a lot, what would you say to those people that say, that would say, it sounds like you're trying to policy or police human behavior, and you can't create policy that's going to change human behavior? What would you say to that? You know, speaking when you were talking about police brutality and things of that nature, those things, those types of thoughts and questions, based on conversations I've had with other people, always come into my mind, where you will hear people saying, well, you can't necessarily create a policy that's going to change the way the police interact with the community. Or maybe even those that say we have the policies in place, they just aren't being enforced. So do we really need more policies? What would you say to those people?
Right. So the people that say you can't, you know, policy or police human behavior, change human behavior with policy, I would say that they're misinformed because we do it every day as a society. That's how we have order and structure in the society we live in. You put your trash out on a corner on a certain day and it gets picked up. You just don't have your trash out on a corner all week long. So your behavior has been shaped by policy when they created those statutes and those laws to say when trash is going to be picked up. And sometimes they change those laws and your behavior changed along with that policy because you don't want to be fined for having your trash out there. Okay, so let me bring this home a little bit. What can we do, and specifically as it relates to police, right? We can't change police behavior from shooting unarmed black people. You can because you have laws and there will be repercussions for doing those things, for shooting and killing unarmed people. Okay. So one of the things that one of the policies that we're demanding be implemented, and you may have heard of some of these over the last year come out. One of the policies we have is that law enforcement officers must present proof of professional liability insurance for the duration of their employment as a police officer. And police agencies will not and cannot reimburse police officers for any cost of liability insurance premium. And so the idea behind that is, if these officers have to carry liability insurance, they're going to be a little more conscious of when they're pulling their gun out and shooting, because there's a repercussion for that. There's going to be a penalty that has to be paid for that, especially if it's unjustified. One of the other policies we're demanding is that we institute citizen review boards in all police jurisdictions within predominantly black communities. So a citizen review board is where people from the community get together on a panel, and it's their job to review the policies, practices, and behavior of the police in their community. And so they make recommendations, and they go down to the legislator, and they ask for things to be changed if needed. And so that's something else that we're asking that or demanding that we institute in our communities. The Bureau of Justice Statistics, we're demanding that they collect and report police misconduct data, specifically including allegations, type of misconduct, misconduct investigation outcomes, and civil judgments, the award amounts by jurisdiction. And we have other policies that go along with this. So the point of what I'm saying is that there are things that we could demand that will shape the behavior over time. Our behavior itself is shaped by the current policies that are in play. Every day, the things that we do is shaped by policy. So to those people, I would say they just have to maybe think about what they're saying on a different level, maybe do a little more investigation about the policies that are actually in play now affecting their own lives.
That's true.
Good.
Right.
Man, look.
And so if I could say something about, you know, going back to this idea of, why is it that UPVA is necessary, or maybe people might think, oh, you guys are trying to separate and you're a separation type of a movement. And not necessarily, that is not what we are advocating at this point. And the reason why UPVA is necessary is because of the system of racism that we find ourselves in. So the system that's generated and sustained by the collective fear of whites. And so what I refer to this, people refer to it often as the system of racism, white supremacy, which I think is a misnomer. And so what I call it is the white inferiority complex syndrome. And so what that is it's based off of the fear, the unwarranted fear, that black people are dangerous and are going to hurt white people. And so they must institute policies and practices and behavior to keep their foot on the necks of black people, because they're afraid that if black people ever stand up and start doing for themselves, not only will they do for themselves, but then we'll start looking about getting some justice.
Mm-hmm.
And justice to white people has always been violent justice. If you look through their history, they're violent people. They have wars. This country has been at war since its inception. And we're about to probably go into another war. So they have always gotten things through violence. So when you have that worldview that you have gotten your position in the world through violence, and you see a peaceful people rising in power, you naturally will become afraid that they're going to do to you what you did to them to get into power. But what they don't understand is the African-centered worldview is different from a Eurocentric worldview. It's not based upon violence. It's based upon humanity and the collective human family that we all belong to. And
right,
so because of this system that's imposed on us, this system is one of competition and capitalism, right? They call us racist. We didn't call ourselves that. That was imposed upon us. They said we're the black race. They said they got a yellow race, a red race, and a white race, and a brown race. They changed all those other names in the middle, and now you just have a white race, a black race, you got Asian Americans, you got Middle Eastern and Hispanics, but those are the yellow and the brown and the Native American and the redneck. They still colors. It's still a race. And what they always do is they put them in this hierarchy oftentimes, and usually black is always at the bottom. They always talk about black people being last in economics, in health, in politics. So what are they saying? We are in a race, and you black people are in last place because you're not running the race. You're on the court already. So it's not a matter of whether you're going to play the game. You're already on the field. You better start playing the game. That's the race game that we find ourselves in. It's not our system. We're not in position of authority and power at this point in history, at this point in time. So we got to play the game that we find ourselves in. We got to play the hand that we are dealt, you know?
And people, when he say we are in a race, he means a racial competition for survival. That's what he means.
Resources and land. Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. It's real out here. This race thing, because Neely Fuller Jr. said it best. When you don't understand the system, white supremacy and racism, everything else will just confuse you. We don't understand what's going on. A lot of people don't understand that we're at war. Like, the war has been, all our war has been declared upon us. And they're continuously murdering us and killing us and poisoning us and doing all these things to us. And we're still trying to give our hugs.
Right. Don't putting our hands up, laying down, playing dead.
Right. What you said, Pat?
Don't insult that boy from Charlotte, the Free Hug Coalition, boy.
Yeah, all right, but police still killing people, though.
Yep.
And hugs still haven't helped to mend the history of police brutality based off that police are citizens on patrol, a.k.a. slave catchers. Because
cops.
What's legal slavery? The penal system. How do you get to the penal system? Who gets you there? Your cops.
Slave catcher. Right. And they are the fraternal order of police. So that's another interesting aspect, too. These are a society, and they have secrets that they don't tell you about. And so people are being killed. These innocent black people are being killed throughout the nation. I wonder what they're talking about in their fraternal order meetings. We'll never know. But we need to do something about it.
I do think one of the reasons why it's so difficult to get us as a collective to understand that we're in a race, much less even a war, is that we don't necessarily understand the nature of conflict in terms of non-physical based conflict. Like whenever you say war, people think, you know, well, I'm not in a war zone, bombs ain't exploding, I don't have you know, ICBMs and other things like that flying through the air. Ain't no warships or gunships or nothing like that shooting down my neighborhood. And, you know, and they don't understand that form of warfare, that violent form of physical warfare is actually the last stage of war. Like, people go there when they progress through all the other stages of war. But before you get to that point, you have economic warfare. You have political warfare. You have cultural warfare. You have all of these other different types of warfare that are being waged before we even get to the violent aspect. And the goal is to exterminate you or at least make you compliant before we get to the physical part. So I think it's just difficult because we still have this visual of war being something different than what war actually is and the different stages of it. So that's why I think it's awesome when you guys use the term like race and say we are in a race, and you're born on the track. You can't opt out.
Right.
You know, when your mom gives birth to you, she gives birth to you in a lane. And from
there
that moment on, you're off. So you can't, you know, you can sit still or whatever you want to do, but you're still in the game. You're still on the track. So I think that might catch on a lot better than warfare will, because the way we're taught about war, the way we think about war, is not in any realistic fashion of what war actually is.
Right.
So, yeah, when you study war and the psychology and the science of war, you come to a point where you understand about psychological warfare, you understand about silent weapons for quiet wars. And so, you know, this race that they got us in, this competition, it's based on a mentality. This is a Eurocentric mentality that we're talking about here. It's based on a mentality that, you know, based off of history, what's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine if I can take it or manipulate you out of your control of it by any means necessary. And so when we go throughout European history, we see that is how they got in power throughout the world. So we find ourselves in a literal race, a race where different cultural and ethnic groups have been classified and grouped together as races, black, white, brown, yellow, red, etc., to compete for control and use of the world's limited resources. We're talking land, oil, gold, other precious minerals or natural resources that are there. And so this has been going on a global scale, you know, from my research, at least since the beginning of the modern era, and for me, most notably, with the Ma'af, the transatlantic slave trade. So basically, we as black Americans, we have not been involved in this race on a global scale. We're still organizing on a national scale. On a local scale, we're organizing. The difficulty we have in doing this is an internal difficulty as it relates to being miseducated, having a history of trauma and victimization, having a loss of our cultural identity, and the factors of acculturation and assimilation that we find ourselves in. And there are also external causes to our predicament, which we see documented in history. So we could talk about chattel slavery, Jim Crow, lynching, voter suppression and intimidation, gerrymandering of county lines, mass incarceration, police killings, which is a continuation of lynching. You know, it's a state-sanctioned lynching going on of unarmed black men. So for me, it's obvious that many of us aren't probably aware of it, but America itself has a race-first mentality. So it's time for us to get in this game and change what that means for us as a community. Like you said, like the brother said, we're born on the court. It's not a matter of where you're going to play the game. The game is already being played, and you're in it. Until you get into a position of power where you have the ball and can change the rules of the game, you need to be trying to get that ball. And so that's what we're trying to do. Let's get together and let's try to make a concerted effort as a group, as a unified people to get that ball. Because they're not going to give you the ball. That's not how the game is played, any game.
Exactly. All right. So earlier you started talking about the six areas of activity that UPBA is starting to is working to affect or to improve for black Americans so we can better build for ourselves and empower ourselves and protect ourselves. So, and we started on the first three. So could we go over the last three so we can get a full understanding of the six areas?
Okay, so the areas we have are economics, human rights, health, justice, family, politics, and education. Okay, so some of the policy demands that we had, we talked about the police misconduct and eradicating police brutality in the black community. We also have some policies on, so going back to this is expanding on the justice part of the committees for UPBA. We're talking about actionable policies to reduce harm from the prison industrial complex. So one policy is to eliminate the use of incarceration for nonviolent first-time offenders, excluding crimes involving the use or possession of a lethal weapon. So we don't think people should have to go to jail for their first crime if it's a nonviolent offense. They should be put in diversion programs to help keep that first-time offender out of the prison system, because we know once you're in the prison system, you're more likely to return to it. You know, it's like job security for the prison industrial complex. Once they get you in there, you're more than likely to come back. You're a higher risk to reoffend. Another policy would be to eliminate the three strikes law, and we want that to be retroactively applied to all nonviolent offenders. We're demanding that there is that they reinstitute the right to a speedy trial. So no individual should be held in an institutional facility without trial for longer than 90 days. And that goes back to the brother Khalif Browder, who was in Rikers Island, having been charged with the crime and never brought before court for a hearing to enter a plea or anything. And he was maintaining his innocence the entire time. And they dropped the charges, let him out, and not even an apology. You know, and that young brother took his life. By committing suicide.
Right. Yeah, it was no healing for all the trauma. None at all.
Right. Mhm. And so those are just three for that area. If we go into talking about actionable demands for addressing political disenfranchisement, so you know, politics is one of our areas of human activity. One, we want felons to automatically have their voting rights restored upon completion of their probation, parole, and incarceration. If not, it's almost double jeopardy. You're punishing the person twice for something they've already supposedly went to prison to pay back their dues to society. So they should be reinstated with all their rights and privileges as a, you know, a upstanding citizen, because they paid for their crime. That is the point of prison, right? They get them to pay for their offense to society. So why are we still punishing these people by keeping them from voting? Because we don't want people that have been to prison to have the power to vote to change things, because they probably will all vote on a similar accord.
Right.
So we think that their voting rights should be restored for people who have already served their time. We're also demanding nonpartisan independent commissions to be established to redraw voting districts for national elections. They shouldn't be drawn by the political party that happens to be in power. We should have a bipartisan or nonpartisan independent commission to draw these district lines for national elections. Also, voter registration laws must be consistent across the United States for national elections. It doesn't make sense why the voting laws in Texas, Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Missouri, New York are different from California. We are one country. We are one nation voting for one president.
Right.
We should have the same voting rights and laws in each state. That should be a unifying thing that unifies this country. We all have the same voting laws in each state. We're also demanding independent commissions to subject oversight from the United Nations to have responsibility for managing the voter registration and voting process in national elections. So basically what we're saying is if we're not going to have that, we need an outside independent group to oversee the U.S. election process to make sure that there is no voter suppression going on, no gerrymandering going on to influence our political situation. Look what's going on now. We see that we have foreign entities trying to influence the election process here. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So not only does America itself have some problems keeping the sanctity of their elections, but they've been doing that to us, you know, since we've been here, changing the laws and suppressing our ability to register to keep us from having political power.
Yeah.
One of the last ones I just want to touch on real quickly is about our economic development and the policy that we have for that. So the United Peoples of Black America has a Recovery and Reinvestment Act that we're proposing to help eliminate disparities in income and assert wealth for Black Americans. So it's akin to the economic crisis that we had in this last great U.S. recession, where there was a Recovery and Reinvestment Act for the banks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's what we're talking about for the Black community, to help build institutions, independent institutions in the Black community. So what are we talking about? How does that look? We're talking about having the Family Self-Sufficiency Program, which will be offered as an option to all Section 8 recipients in income-eligible low-income households with one child or more in rental properties who have never owned a home. So you have to look up what is the Family Self-Sufficiency Program. Okay, these are programs that exist that aren't necessarily being utilized in our community or directed towards our community, these programs and these funds. We're demanding a tax credit of 10% on the price of a home, up to $10,000 for the first-time African-American home buyers, and there'll be a tax credit of 5% on the price of a home, up to $7,500 for African-American replacement home purchases. And so people are like, well, why would Black people get these special tax credits and get this money back? Well, do you know that the United States has policies that gives people money, that gives welfare to groups and organizations? We can talk about
right. The
policies that the United States has for the Jewish American community. The money that we give to Israel, your tax dollars, my tax dollars that we give to a nation, every year, we have a budget built in for the nation of Israel. We have money that we give as reparation to the descendants of Holocaust survivors, even though the United States didn't institute a Holocaust. But
right. They
are paying money to that group of people, you know?
And
so you can pay people money, or you could create policies to help build that community. The federal government, we're also demanding the federal government establish interest-free loans for business expansion of African-American small business owners that have predominantly Black workforces. We need to eliminate expected parental contribution eligibility requirements for African-American college students. Okay? black college students should be supplemented just like Native Americans are. When they want to go to college, Native Americans, they were here before the formation of the United States and the ratification of the Constitution in 1776. Well, you know what? Black African people were here too. Us, descendants of slaves, we were here too. So that is part of our right.
Right.
That is something that is owed to us based off of not some charity, but because of what we did to contribute to the formation of this nation. And because of that sovereignty we have as being residents in this land before the United States of America formed. So those are some of the policies that we have. I would refer people to our website. We have the blackpolicyagenda.com, where you can go and you can read the policies for yourself, and you could think about them and vote yay or nay and on whether or not you think those are policies we should be demanding for our community.
So what are... I know you're mostly a policy creation organization or a think tank, if you will. Have you actually had a chance to get out in the community and do some sort of grassroots community work?
Oh, most definitely. So, yeah, those are the policy is very important and central to UPBA, but we're also very active in the community. Last year we got to participate. We were invited on invited to participate in the Tallahassee Community Healing Network that they had last year. And this year we were formally invited to participate, and we held an informational meeting on that Friday night, and then Saturday night we had a panel discussion with members of the community and experts from the community to talk about these policies, some of these policies that I just mentioned. We also have African-Centered Saturday School. That's one of our programs. We developed the curriculum for that, and we're recruiting students to get that up and running. We also have the programs that are starting right here, which are our mental health programs. We have the education program I talked about, the African-Centered Saturday School, and the business incubation program that we're starting here. So the business incubation program is talking about addressing the problem of black youth in Tallahassee lacking financial literacy and opportunities to develop entrepreneurship skills. And we're offering a matched scholarship of over $500 to the individuals that participate in this program, the ones that win this competition. Will be funding, help funding their business ideas. And so we want to keep these programs going in our community and document the process so that we can mass produce it and export it to wherever you find yourself. Again, the whole point of UPBA is not to get a bunch of people joining the organization just to follow us. We definitely want people to register and to become members so that we can stay connected, so we can stay unified. But the most important thing about UPBA is its ideas, and the ideas need to catch fire. So if you can take these ideas, if you hear these policies and you agree with them, and you're already a part of an organization active in the community, that's great. Take these ideas and these policies with you. When you guys go out to the legislator, when you're out there protesting down at the Capitol, and they put that microphone in front of you and they say, okay, some unarmed black person was shot yesterday. What do you want? We can't bring that person back. What do you want? So once you have that camera and that attention on that national level, then you speak about the policy changes that you demand be implemented.
Right.
And, you know, we have ways of enforcing that, those policy demands, to get them implemented. And we have a sanctions plan that I won't talk about on the air, but, you know, when you come to the UPBA meeting, you'll hear about the way that we will levy sanctions, boycott against groups in order to get, you know, our needs met, in order to get our voices heard.
Okay.
These are things that we have to do in an organized, concerted method. We're doing these things individually, but we need to do them on one accord in our individual groups.
So let me ask this. All right. So we have people who have heard what you said, and
mm-hmm.
now these people want to become a part of this society. They want to know how they can become involved with UPBA. Can you give our audience information on how they can become a part of the society, and what are you expecting interested parties to contribute to the society?
Okay, sure. Well, one of the first things you can do is to look at our policies. I said at blackpolicyagenda.com, all one word, of course. And you can go to our main website, upblackamerica.com, all one word. On that website, you'll find a place where you can register to get in touch with us. Or if you don't want to do that, you could just email us at UnitedPeoplesOfBlackAmerica, all one word, at gmail.com. If that doesn't work, you can also just reach out to me personally, Dr. Holler. You can reach me at DL Holler. That's D as in Daniel, L as in Layton, Holler, H-O-L-L-A-R, at gmail.com. And I can give you more details on a one-to-one basis. And let's see.
Cool.
Go ahead.
No, so just to reiterate your websites. Remember, it's you can go visit to learn more about the policies and things that people can bring to the organization. Go to www.blackpolicyagenda.com, and you can also go to www.upblackamerica.com. All right. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You were saying something. I'm sorry.
Right. So. What is it that UPBA is asking of the community? This is what we're asking of the community. We're asking people in the community to become active members. We'll refer to you as a community builder. So, again, UPBA is a society that is heavily dependent on multifaceted coalitions of organizations that represent the institutional infrastructure of our communities. So we're currently building chapters across the United States to manage that infrastructure and achieve the agenda presented in our policy platform and the Constitution that you'll find on the website. And so what we're asking is that you first read the policy and the Constitution thoroughly. If you have questions, you can reach out to myself or Dr. Onafade through the email. And then if you're older than 15 years of age and interested in joining the chapter as a community builder, we have several expectations. One, again, I said read the policy platform and Constitution. Two, fill out the registration form that you find on the website. Three, select one of the six or seven human activity areas that you would like to work on. We're also asking that people contribute to our efforts financially. So you can contribute $100 to our efforts. Half of that money will be available to your local chapter, while the remainder is for the national agenda, including building the Black Credit Union. And that's part of our economic platform. And if you join the economic committee, you'll find out more details about that. We're also asking for you to mobilize at least five individuals that you would like to work with in your local community on that human activity that you chose. And again, just contact a UPBA representative at UnitedPeoplesOfBlackAmerica@gmail.com for more information.
Yes, sir. All right. So now this is the time where we do our special question, and we ask this question to everybody because we like the different answers and everything that we get. But it's our one question that we really, really, really like to ask our guests, and this is Pat's question. So I'm gonna go ahead and set it up for him like this. Patrick,
I have myself muted, but I'm back.
See?
Now. run that drum roll back for me.
Hold on. See.
Jay, are you there?
Yep.
So, if you were the all-powerful, all-knowing ruler of Black America, what would you change? And what would your message to the people be?
Okay. What I would change is I wouldn't be the all-powerful ruler of Black America. That's the first thing I would change. But to answer the question, I would change the educational system for Black Americans to an African-centered one that teaches us how to use our education and ultimately our minds in ways that are beneficial to ourselves and the members of our community, and to come up with a plan that could be implemented for the next 50 years to sustain that growth and implement change that our children can follow and our children's children can follow. So that's the main thing I would change. I think that the integration on certain aspects was good, but on many aspects was detrimental to us as a community and what it means to be a community, to be interdependent upon each other. And instead, the integration has made us dependent on the larger society. It almost has re-enslaved us, if you look at that, as slavery, as being dependent upon someone else to provide your needs and your daily living activity structure. We are enslaved in that regard. And so what I would say is for us to pull our kids back out of that integrated educational system, that assimilation program, which is what it is, that's an acculturation machine, and put them in Black African-centered education programs where we define what is important in our history instead of teaching them the first thing about Blacks is slavery. You know, we have a rich history as the first peoples on this planet that we could go back way further than that.
Hey.
So, yeah, I think that's going to be key, you know, getting it in there from, I'm talking pre-K, from pre-K through, you know, throughout 12th grade and onward until we get our own institutions that are from under the financial grip of people from that are outside of our community. You know, we got to start with our little ones, educate them right, get them to a point where if they do have to go to one of those Ivy League institutions, they're going there with an African-centered worldview, and they're going to take that knowledge and bring it back home to their community versus, you know, what we see going on today on a large scale.
There it is, people. There it is. And remember, visit www.upblackamerica.com. Also, you can visit www.blackpolicyagenda.com to learn more about UPBA and the policies and everything that they bring to the table to help create an independent Black community, which we need, a connected, organized, independent Black community. So, hey, man, it was a pleasure having you on. You dropped a whole lot of knowledge. You dropped a whole lot of knowledge, and you helped to reinforce some of the things that Pat and I talk about on the show. And so, yeah, people, once again, y'all, we not crazy, the stuff we saying. You had Dr. Garvey co-signed us, and you saying the same thing. So, look, people, me and Pat not crazy. I know y'all be thinking we crazy, but we not.
Well, I'm a little bit, but I own it, and I wear it well, too.
But we ain't delusional, hey, put it like that.
Hey, like Dr. Naeem Akbar says, actually, we all crazy because we're not in our right African minds.
That's
we
true.
Out here acting like Europeans in ways that we don't even understand yet. But the first thing, the first step towards healing is to admit it, to own it, right?
Yes,
we
sir.
Know we ain't. We ain't right. That's why we're trying to get right. We're trying to get it right for our kids and their children.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, yeah.
But, yeah, thank you guys for having me on and allowing me to talk about UPBA. Because,
man, no
of
problem.
Course, this is our base of operations here in Tallahassee. So we definitely, need to pull in more people in the area, get them all involved, and get the word out of what's going on.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. We happy to help you get the word out. So, man, so we definitely going to talk again in the future, have you back on the train, especially with things coming up in the future. So look forward to that.
Definitely.
Yes, sir. All right, we'll speak to you later.
All right. Y'all
All
be
right.
safe.
Yes, yep. sir.
All right. One.
Yes, sir. All right, people, www.upblackamerica.com as well as www.blackpolicyagenda.com, because if you don't know, now you know. Glory, glory. Yep. So, hey, man, you know. He said what we be saying.
Yep.
Nah.
Yeah, he dropped a lot of information.
Yeah. Should have been playing that song. You dropped a bomb on me.
Baby.
That is. So guess what, people? Y'all already know how we do. I'm Joseph Ward. He's Patrick Irvin. Shout out to Jamie. He couldn't make it today, but shout out to Jamie. We are the Freedom Train Community. We are the Freedom Train Podcast Series, your community resource podcast. Our mission is to connect professionals, business owners, and resources to our community members to help uplift and empower our communities. The Freedom Train is sponsored by PACTS Inc. And that's PACTSINC. And PACTS Inc. is a black advocacy organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. And for more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. Also, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com. Follow the Freedom Train at _FreedomTrain on Twitter and Instagram, and subscribe to the Freedom Train podcast on iTunes and Google Play Music. And until next time, we'll holler at y'all. Two fingers up like a player, split them apart. As always, we out of here.